Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a really fascinating subject, the British political system. On the surface, it seems, you know, rock solid, centuries old.
Mm-hmm.
But our source today, an analysis by Tony Wright, paints a much more complicated picture.
It really does. We're looking at the system that's famous for stability, for continuity, but Wright argues it's actually facing a profound crisis, institutional decay, he calls it.
Yeah, and that's the core tension we want to unpack, isn't it? This contradiction.
Exactly. How can it be both? Wright says, look, British politics is flexible, it adapts, it has this incredible historical continuity.
Right.
But then he also says, hold on, there's this deep structural rot setting in. Too much power in one place, people totally disillusioned.
So that's our mission for this deep dive.
Yeah.
How can a system seem so resilient yet potentially be fraying at the edges?
Or maybe even at the core.
Right, at the core. We're exploring how a major democracy, one built largely on unwritten rules, on sort of good faith.
The good chap theory, as it's sometimes called.
Exactly. How does that start to wobble when maybe the good chaps aren't playing by those unwritten rules anymore?
And look, this isn't just a British issue, is it? Understanding how any democracy relies on those norms, written or unwritten,
mm-hmm.
and the danger when politicians stop respecting them, that's relevant everywhere. It gives us lessons for governance across the globe.
Definitely. Okay, so let's get into it. First, who is Tony Wright? He's not just some academic looking from the outside in, right?
No, not at all. And that's what makes his perspective so valuable. He's this rare blend. He's got the academic chops, professor of government and public policy, rigorous thinker.
But he's also been in the trenches.
Deep in the trenches. He was a Labour MP for Connaught Chase for, 18 years? From 92 to 2010?
18 years. That's a long time inside the system he's analyzing.
It really is. So he brings that practical, hands-on, sometimes, you know, frustrated insight of someone who actually tried to make the system work.
He wasn't just reading about parliamentary procedure. He was living it.
Absolutely. And crucially, he chaired the Public Administration Select Committee. That gave him this, forensic view of how government really operates. The civil service, the struggle to hold power accountable.
It must lend a certain weight to his critique. Knowing he was part of that world for so long, it suggests it comes from real concern, not just theory.
I think so. He knows the textbook version, and he knows the messy reality behind the scenes. That combination of scholarly understanding and practical experience, that's what makes his analysis so powerful.
Okay, let's dive into that analysis then. It seems to revolve around these two kind of opposing views of the British system. Let's start with the first one, the continuity, the traditional strength.
Right, so view one is essentially about evolution and adaptation. The system's historic strength, Wright acknowledges, is its ability to change gradually over time.
Organically, almost.
Exactly. It's this mix of formal laws, yes, but also, crucially, informal stuff. Conventions, practices, understandings. It bends. It doesn't break easily. That's how it weathered, world wars, massive social change, without needing constitutional upheavals.
So flexibility as a feature, not a bug.
Historically, yes, but then comes view two. The crisis.
And this is where that strength becomes a weakness.
That's the argument. That very flexibility is now seen as a dangerous vulnerability. Why? Well, symptoms include massive public distrust, disillusionment, this feeling politics is just something done to people.
Right.
But the structural cause, Wright argues, is institutional decay, driven by this relentless concentration of power right at the top in the executive branch.
So putting it together, the central idea is that the very things that made it strong and adaptable, the unwritten constitution, parliamentary sovereignty, are now the source of the problem because they've allowed power to become too concentrated without enough formal checks.
You've absolutely nailed it. Flexibility is fantastic when everyone plays nice, but if the rules are unwritten, it relies on self-restraint. And Wright's point is modern politics doesn't really reward restraint anymore.
Which makes those historical pillars suddenly seem quite shaky. Let's dig into the first one. The unwritten constitution. For listeners maybe more familiar with, say, the U.S. system where you have a single document, what does unwritten actually mean in the U.K. context?
Well, it doesn't mean no rules. It just means the rules aren't all in one place. It's a kind of patchwork.
Okay.
You've got acts of parliament, statute law. You've got common law, decisions made by judges over centuries. And then, really importantly, you have conventions and precedents.
The unwritten rules.
Exactly. The things everyone sort of agrees should happen, how power should be exercised, even if it's not strictly legally required.
And tightly linked to that is parliamentary sovereignty. The idea that Parliament is the ultimate authority, it can make or break any law, sounds like a powerful check on power.
In theory, it is the ultimate check. Parliament is supreme. But, and this is a huge but in rights analysis, in practice, that theoretical power has largely been captured by the executive, by the government of the day.
Which leads us straight to his critique of the elective dictatorship.
Yeah, that's a really striking phrase, isn't it? Elective dictatorship.
It is. But hang on, don't we need strong governments to actually get things done?
Yeah.
Is he just arguing for political paralysis?
That's a fair question, but I don't think that's his point. It's not about strong leadership versus weak leadership. It's about checked power versus unchecked power.
Okay.
He argues that power has become dangerously concentrated in what he calls the core executive, basically, the prime minister and their closest advisors.
Right, Downing Street, the cabinet office.
Exactly. And he points out how the traditional model of cabinet government, where the whole cabinet of senior ministers collectively debated and decided policy, has often been sidelined.
Replaced by prime ministerial government. We think of examples like Thatcher's dominance or Tony Blair and SOFA government making decisions informally outside the main cabinet room.
Those are classic examples. And how does the executive manage this? Primarily through its control over parliament, mostly via strict party discipline.
And the payroll vote you mentioned earlier.
Yes, the payroll vote is key. Think about it. In the House of Commons, maybe 100, 150 MPs are actually part of the government ministers, junior ministers, parliamentary private secretaries.
Their jobs depend on voting with the government line.
Their careers depend on it. So the government starts with this huge block of guaranteed votes. Combine that with party loyalty for backbenchers.
And suddenly Parliament, the supposed sovereign body, looks much less like a check and much more like a rubber stamp for the executive's decisions.
That's the danger Raitt identifies. Parliament becomes reactive. It debates, it scrutinizes, yes, but its ability to fundamentally block or change the government's direction is often quite limited, especially if the government has a decent majority. The system is almost designed for executive convenience.
So on the one hand, power is pulling tightly into the center, but at the same time, the structure of the UK itself seems to be pulling apart.
Yes, that's the other massive shift. Devolution. Giving significant powers to Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland fundamentally changed the UK. It went from being a very centralized, unitary state.
London decides everything.
Pretty much. To being this, well, messy halfway house, quasi-federal, some call it.
And that inevitably created tensions, right? Things that didn't quite fit together in the new setup. The classic one is the West Lothian question.
Ah, yes, the West Lothian question. It's a perfect illustration of the sort of constitutional untidiness.
Remind us what it is.
It basically asks, why should MPs representing Scottish constituencies in the UK Parliament be able to vote on laws that only affect England, say, on English health or education policy, when English MPs have no say over those same matters in Scotland because they've been devolved to the Scottish Parliament?
It highlights an asymmetry, an inconsistency.
Exactly. It's not just a theoretical puzzle. It points to a feeling of unfairness and reveals the cracks in this patched-together settlement.
And all this constitutional flux is happening against a backdrop where the political parties themselves are changing, maybe weakening.
Right, definitely sees that too. The old stable two-party system seems to be eroding, and the parties themselves feel different. He talks about them being hollowed out.
What does that mean, hollowed out?
Fewer members, less connection to grassroots communities, less rooted in broad social movements. They function more like centralized election fighting machines, focused on winning power.
Rather than representing deep strands of society.
Kind of. More like brands competing for votes in key marginal seats, rather than organic expressions of different parts of the nation.
Okay, if we step back from the details, Wright's analysis seems to offer some really core takeaways, maybe four key themes that help us understand democratic health or lack thereof, really anywhere.
I think that's right. The first one, and maybe the most fundamental, is what we touched on, the death of the good chap theory.
Right, the reliance on unwritten rules and self-restraint.
Exactly. The system historically depended on political actors basically behaving themselves, respecting the spirit, not just the letter, of the non-existent law.
You can see parallels everywhere, can't you? Think about any workplace or organization. The employee handbook only covers so much.
Right. The real day-to-day functioning relies on unspoken norms, a shared culture of how things are done, of decency, of professionalism.
And when that breaks down, maybe because of intense partisanship where winning is everything,
then the whole thing becomes unstable because the written rules alone aren't enough to stop people gaming the system or abusing power.
Okay, takeaway one, the danger when unwritten norms collapse. What's number two?
Number two is the inherent tension, flexibility versus accountability. The system's great strength, its adaptability, is also its great weakness when it comes to holding power accountable.
Because the rules are fluid, they can be bent.
Precisely. It's hard to pin down breaches of convention when the conventions themselves aren't formally codified. Accountability becomes slippery.
Makes sense. Number three.
The crisis of political engagement. Wright flips the script here. He suggests maybe we shouldn't blame the public for being cynical or disengaged.
Why not?
Because maybe it's a perfectly rational response to a system that feels remote, unaccountable, and designed to exclude them. If politics feels like something done to you, not with you, why would you trust it?
So disengagement isn't apathy. It's a symptom of a deeper problem with the system itself.
That's the argument. And the final one is the enduring legacy of history. Old ways of doing things, ancient procedures, centuries-old principles they shape and often constrain modern politics.
History isn't just background. It actively limits the options for reform.
Yeah. The system can be incredibly slow and resistant to change, even when problems seem obvious, because that's the way it's always been done.
Wright's analysis is quite complex, but he uses some really vivid language to make these points stick, doesn't he?
He really does. Great metaphors that cut through the jargon.
Like capturing that evolutionary nature. British politics is like a flowing river. It appears to stay the same while constantly changing its course. That sense of hidden change beneath a stable surface.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or clarifying the whole unwritten thing. The unwritten constitution is not the absence of rules, but the presence of flexibility. It reframes it positively initially.
But then underlines the reliance on behavior. In British politics, the most important rules are often the ones that are never written down, highlighting the centrality of convention.
Mm. But if those conventions fail, you're left exposed. Which leads to his core critique, summed up starkly. The system has too few formal checks on the abuse of power.
That really gets to the heart of the decay argument.
It does. It lays bare the vulnerability.
Okay, so this isn't just an academic debate about the UK. How can listeners, wherever they are, use these insights in a practical way?
Well, first, it encourages critical news consumption. When you see a government taking action, apply that elective dictatorship lens. Ask not just what are they doing, but how are they doing it?
How easily are they getting their agenda through? Is there real scrutiny?
Exactly. Is the legislature acting as a genuine check or more like a conveyor belt? It shifts your focus from just the policy substance to the health of the process.
Good point.
What else? Think about organizational leadership. Wright's points about the civil service needing institutional memory and expertise balanced against political direction. That applies anywhere.
You mean like in a business or any organization?
Yeah. Any organization needs stability and expertise alongside innovation and change. If you throw out all the institutional knowledge every time there's a new boss, you risk chaos. Finding that balance between stability and responsiveness is crucial.
And finally,
it promotes a kind of informed citizenship. Maybe call it critical patriotism.
Yeah.
Meaning that truly supporting your democracy involves understanding its flaws, questioning its myths, and probing its weaknesses, not just waving a flag. It's about engaging your brain, not just your heart.
So it's about being an active analyst of how power works, not just a passive recipient of news.
You got it.
For me, the thing that really stood out in this deep dive was that irony, how the very thing the UK system is most celebrated for, its longevity, its stability,
mm-hmm.
actually ended up masking this potential decay for so long. It created a sort of false confidence that the unwritten rules would always hold.
Yeah, that's a powerful takeaway. For me, I think Wright's biggest contribution is forcing us to confront the gap between the comforting theory, parliamentary democracy, checks and balances, and the often uncomfortable reality of executive dominance. He pulls back the curtain.
Which leaves us and you, the listener, with a pretty challenging final thought to consider. If that good chap theory really is dead, if self-restraint can no longer be relied upon,
then is the UK ultimately heading towards needing a formal written constitution to actually safeguard its own democracy? Is that flexibility now too big a risk?
Something to ponder. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Tony Wright's crucial analysis.
It's been fascinating.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.